Good morning. Welcome to the Monday, April 26th edition of the Joint Committee on Ways and Means Natural Resource Subcommittee. Today we're in the process of continuation of House Bill 1519, which is the Department of Environmental Quality budget. We are in the midst of an agency program presentation. We're going to hear the agency management and governor's budget summary. And today we have Helen here today to do that. And then we'll have the summary of the governor's recommended budget. But before we start that, I'll ask if there's any logistics that we need to be brought up to speed on by our committee staff.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm going to pass out a letter that the department brought forward today regarding their activities in the Klamath Basin area. And I'd like to remind the committee that tomorrow will be a work session on the land use board of the fields budget. We're scheduled to do a work session on the Department of Geology and Mineral Industry tomorrow and carrying over into Wednesday if needed. And on Thursday, we will discuss a public hearing on Senate Bill 1109, and we'll revisit the environmental justice issue with the Department of Environmental Quality.
Our colleague, the question of how we get through this agenda is going to be directly affected by how far afield we go with questioning on issues that are not specifically related to financial issues. So I'll ask our colleagues to also remember that we're really here to focus on the financial issues. So with that, we'll move forward. Mr. Rocker, did you want to discuss the letter from Aqua Glass, or did you want to move right into the agency management budget summary?
Mr. Chair, I think we should move right into the summary.
Can we have forward then Helen Lothridge, Management Services Administrator, along with the Director of Department of Environmental Quality, Mr. Langdon Marsh? Good morning.
Good morning.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for the record, I'm Lang Marsh, Director of DEQ, and we do appreciate your interest in the dialogue that we've had over the last couple of weeks talking about our program. Now we want to talk about the challenge of paying for what we do, and Helen Lothridge, DEQ's Administrator of Management Services, is going to review our overall budget, and then we'll get into more detail about the policy packages as we get into the work session. And we have brought back the division administrators for air, water, waste management cleanup in case you have program-directed questions that are relevant to our budget.
And the illustration would be that of Co-Chair Mr. Lee chairing the Salmon Restoration Committee during hearing on the House Bill 3225. Seen hanging by a thread there, holding on by his fingernails.
I know the feeling.
Me too. Shall we proceed?
Thank you. For the record, my name is Helen Lothridge. I'm the Administrator of the Management Services Division. And Mr. Chair, the person clinging to the rock is actually Langdon Moore. Trying to fund the activities of the department.
For those that are tuning in, I'm for the three people that are tuning in on the internet, the director showed the illustrations of a rock climber in a precipitous face of rock clinging by his fingernails. So.
It'd be a Belter version of the director, I think.
You'll find either in front of you or right under tab 5 of your blue notebook, the handout that I'll be working from today. I'm going to do an overview of our budget, and in addition to reviewing just the numbers, I'm going to go over some of the less obvious characteristics of our budget that will hopefully give you a little fuller picture of what we're dealing with here. First, let's take a look at our total budget. This chart represents everything in our budget, limited and non-limited. Now, about 46% of our budget is non-limited and debt service on earlier bond sales. Non-limited money helps local governments with wastewater projects via loans and grants. When Mike Llewellyn was talking to you about the water quality program, he mentioned the state revolving fund, and that's primarily what this non-limited budget is for. It's we do administer that program. It's pass-throughs of money to local governments to help with their infrastructure projects. The non-limited budget is subject to your authorization, but it is not money that DEQ is spending, so to speak, on its operation. The other 54% of our budget, of our total budget, is the spending limitation that we have available to do our work. So that's what we refer to as our operating budget. Whenever I talk about our operating budget, I'll be referring to that 54% portion of the total budget pie. Some of you were on this committee in 1997, and you probably remember that our budget had multiple funding shortfalls, and we had a lot of requests for new fees coming before you. And on top of that, after we put our budget together, we were faced with an additional $4.5 million shortfall caused by an unexpected drop in the fee revenue from our hazardous substance disposal facility out at Arlington. We, of course, had no desire to repeat that experience, and I'm sure you didn't either. And so we promised to do two things in the interim. First, we promised to look for funding solutions for the long term. And second, we promised to minimize our fee increase requests in 1999. We did both, and in that process, we developed some strategies to create our current budget request. That's the one that you see before you today. First of all, we looked in-house to create efficiencies and to make the most of the money that we do have. And second, we asked for more general funds to balance out our reliance on fees. We also filed a bill that would increase our fees in step with the consumer price index. Last session, a lot of our fee requests were catch-up for several years of inflation, and that led to very large jumps in fees. And so this bill would increase the fees gradually just to keep pace with inflation. And finally, we constructed what we feel is quite a conservative budget when we consider the amount of work that there is to be done. Now, as we go through this budget today, I'll explain how we implemented each of these strategies and how they're working or not working so far. Before we bring you any budget requests, we recognize that we have a responsibility to make the most of what we have through efficiency and other savings. And this is our first budget strategy. In 1997, you authorized one FTE to help DEQ with continuous improvement. And we put a lot of emphasis on efficiencies and savings during the last 2 years. You've already heard about some of these from Greg, Mary, and Mike. Agency-wide, we gained efficiency by organizing a single strategic planning process that guides budget requests, our major EPA grant applications, and our employee work plans. You'll find a copy of Section 1 of that strategic plan document under tab 7 of your blue binder. Our goals are results-oriented. There's a brochure that you may have or that Mr. Rocco will be distributing to you that shows our mission, vision, and values. And on the back of that brochure, you can see our high-level goals. And we're working very hard towards making our goals very results-oriented and toward developing progress measures. that are meaningful environmentally speaking. Now, this is a picture of our air quality permit process improvement team. Greg Green pointed out during his presentation that efficiencies allow us to reinvest some resources in air quality, for example, resources that now support permit activities into the higher priority non-point source work, but at the same time not losing any gains or service that we have in the point source or permitting type of work. And we have similar efforts going on in other areas of the agency.
Do we have, do we have benchmarks set for these areas, the goal areas for air quality, water quality, and waste management?
For the, Mr. Chair, for the improvements process or for, from the Oregon benchmarks?
I guess I'm interested in both perspectives, but primarily in just the agency setting its own goals. Does it have an interface with the benchmark process at all?
Mr. Chair, yes. Yes, we do.
We do work hand-in-hand with the benchmark process, but in addition to that, we're wanting to set goals and measures that are more meaningful. Historically, in environmental protection, we and everybody else in the field has counted activities, number of inspections, number of cleanups, that sort of thing. And what we want to do is have our measures be more outcome-oriented, more results-oriented, so that we have indicators that show what the environmental results of our work are. And we have established goals and measures in some of these, and you will see these under tab 7 to the extent that they've been developed. One of our problems is that these are measures that are very difficult to establish. It requires quite a lot of study in order to make sure that we're asking the right question and answering the right question, and we don't have funding to do this with. So it moves along slowly, but we are developing these goals, and yes, we are working with the progress board. Did that answer your question, Mr. Chair?
It did. I was interested in the interface, but I'm also, I guess, interested if there's any specific benchmarks for air, water, or air quality, water quality, or waste management and cleanup issues.
Mr. Chair, if I may, yes, we have, as Helen indicated, begun to develop some of these. One of the challenges is that we have this elaborate history of reporting to the EPA for a lot of these measures, and some of that has driven us toward this more output or activity-based reporting, which we don't think really is meaningful or terribly meaningful. So we've been working a lot with the EPA on the national level to try to turn that around to a more environmental indicator or outcome-based reporting system. And I think we've been having some success through, for example, the Environmental Council of the States, which I serve on, which is the organization of all of the environmental directors from around the country. We just recently agreed on a list of about 40 measures that would, over time, be the primary kind of outcome-oriented measures by which would be by which our performance would be assessed. And so we're trying to bring more of that back into our process as well. As part of the strategic planning, I emphasize there's an objective for each of the programs that they invest a little bit of time in the development of indicators and measures. So you'll be, we can give you a little bit more of the specifics on that in writing.
And Mr. Chair, I think you may have located just now under tab 6 we have our Oregon benchmark for DEQ. That's in your blue notebook. Okay, our second budget strategy was to use general funds to balance our reliance on fees. Now, on this slide, I showed on the left a pie chart representing the 89-91 budget. And it's really to show the fund split. You can see that general fund was 33% of our budget, 10 years ago. Our funding sources have shifted a lot during the past 10 years. Now we're very heavily reliant on other funds, which includes fees, cost recovery, transfers from other agencies, beginning balance consumption, and bond proceeds for the orphan site cleanup. The biggest chunk of other funds is fees. This biennium, our government budget request is 16% general fund. In keeping with our strategy, when we constructed our budget, we had identified the need for $12 million of new general funds, but you can see in your budget that only $1.6 million of new general funds is in there. That's because there's simply not enough general fund available, and so this is one budget strategy that didn't solve the whole problem. One effect of our increasing reliance on other funds is less and less flexibility. Most of our resources are dedicated by law to specific activities. This chart represents the portions of our operating budget which are dedicated in that way, and then the portions that are not. When we run into budget problems, we cannot use flexibility to solve them, usually. We have to make cuts fund by fund. Sometimes we're forced to cut a relatively higher priority because there isn't any money available there and we're unable to shift from other areas. Our third budget strategy is to make sure that our funding keeps up with inflation. Now, 17% of our operating budget, that's the part made up of general fund and lottery, does increase for inflation. General fund and lottery go up each biennium according to a set formula in the budget process to keep pace with inflation. But the other 83% doesn't increase with inflation. Our indexing bill, which is House Bill 2182, was a first step toward keeping pace with increasing costs. Over the long haul, House Bill 2182 would have allowed us to stay even with inflation. We were proposing a gradual implementation so that this biennium, just five fees would have increased an average of 3.5%. This legislation, however, has no support, so that's basically two budget strategies so far that aren't working as we had hoped they would. Now, the biggest impact of inflation, of course, for us and for everyone is always on the cost of labor. And every biennium, we deal with a built-in problem in our budgeting process that makes our true budget less adequate than what's in the budget that you legislatively adopt. I'm going to give you an actual example from this current biennium. After the budget was passed in 1997, there was a pay increase for state employees amounting to $4.4 million in additional expense at DEQ for the 97-99 biennium. Now, the E-Board typically allocates some general fund to each agency to cover part of the increased cost, but only for those salaries paid by general fund. For the 97-99 biennium, the E-Board allocated $700,000 of that general fund cost. But remember, now only 16% of our budget is general fund. The rest is federal and other, mostly fees, funded. So we have to absorb the increased cost for those salaries paid by federal and other funds. In this example, that's over $3.5 million. How do we absorb that cost? Well, if we have any ending balances, that is kind of savings accounts from previous biennia, we can use at least some of that. We don't have much, however, in the way of ending balances after three biennia of revenue shortfalls. And so we have to look at holding positions open, and that's what we have done throughout this biennia. We had to hold some positions open in order to pay for this unbudgeted pay increase that happened after the 1997 session. This leads to a deterioration of service and environmental protection. Now, of course, as I mentioned, our increasing reliance on other funds and federal funds instead of general funds makes this problem worse. Okay, implementing our fourth budget strategy, we constructed what we feel is a conservative budget. Our operating budget proposal represents a 6.6% increase from last biennium's operating budget. Let's take a look at what's in that 6.6%. This is a summary of our policy packages. We currently have authorization for 739 FTEs. Now, right under that, you see reduction and adjustment packages subtracting 35.95 FTE. Those are phase-outs of limited duration positions that we knew would end at the after this biennium, and it also represents the positions that we can't afford based on our forecast for revenue during 9901. We're going to ask to keep about half of these 36 reduction positions, and you'll see that in the policy packages.
Senator Connell has a question.
Your budgetary approved for 739 positions, but under the current service level, how you listed as 703. Are you just filling the 703 positions? Is that what this thing means?
Senator Tarno, the 703 would be the result of 739 less the 35.95 that are either phase outs or ones that we can't afford. And so that would be where the 703 comes from.
Sure. But you have the funds for 739.
I'm sorry, Senator Tarno, I didn't hear that.
You have the 9799 funds for 739 positions.
Oh, Mr. Chair, Senator Tarno, we had authorization for 739 positions in 97-99, and the limitation that not necessarily the fund. And in fact, when we look into the future, into 99-01, and estimate how much revenue we're going to have coming in, we find that we can't afford all of those 739 positions.
Senator, I think in my manner of speaking, the pay increases that were approved after the end of the legislative session turned into staff reductions.
That's correct. We held an average of about 22 positions vacant throughout the biennium. They weren't the same positions consistently, but an average of 22. Did that answer your question, Senator Brown? I would like for you to make one note about this. You see that under the air quality policy option package is 98.5 FTE. 75 of those positions are not new people. They are existing contract staff that we have from a temporary agency that we're requesting to convert to permanent DEQ employees.
Question. Are those folks mostly in the air quality management program in the Portland area?
Mr. Chair, yes, they are.
And
I think all of them.
Mr. Chair, all of the contract employees are through the Portland company for Portland air quality stations. The Medford folks are all permanent employees.
So the conversion there from existing contract staff to permanent employees, I assume that will drive significant costs within the agency.
Mr. Chair, of course, the VIP program is all self-funded. It's funded from the fees that are collected for the inspection. We have done analysis that indicates that the cost of running a contract versus the cost of hiring permanent employees is about the same. And there are some advantages in terms of better turnover ratios among the permanent staff so that we don't have to keep retraining people. That's why we've proposed it for permanent. It's not a, there is a very small cost differential. We can provide those figures in favor of the contract. But, you know, it's a really small amount, $40,000 or something like that,
mm-hmm.
over a very large program. So we felt that the other advantages outweighed the very minor cost savings.
And just a follow-up question to that. When does the sulfur standard drop for saccharin?
Mr. Chair, the EPA has not announced it officially, but our understanding is that it will happen in about 2004. And beginning in that year, we will begin to see benefits, significant benefits from that, which will increase over time.
And I assume that we'll probably not need to continue the clean air testing program in Portland if we have that attainment of the standard.
Mr. Chair, it's our expectation that the current clean air maintenance plan runs through 2006-2007, and we would expect to do a major reevaluation leading up to that year when we have to submit a new 10-year plan that would probably have a different role for inspection and maintenance than in the current plan. So our current projections, even with the lower sulfur fuel being introduced in 2004, would be to continue that plan, that current inspection program, pretty much as is through the 2006-2007 time frame. There are several other things that will influence the changeover. One is that there's also contemplated new car standards starting in 2004, which again will produce a better, cleaner vehicle. And of course, since 1996, all new cars have had onboard diagnostics, which will eventually allow a computerized inspection, if you will, that won't require the centralized station, actually.
Okay. Jensen, you had your hand up a minute ago.
Oh, yeah. I'll back off from questioning.
Let's just back off.
Just back off. Yeah.
Any other, Senator Mester, have a question?
Yes, Mr. Chair, I'd just like to follow up on your line of questioning there. A couple of questions came to my mind. Number one, it would seem to me, you say the difference between moving to contract employees as opposed to department employees is $1,000 difference. And I would think, as long as the chair is innovated, I would think the cost would be significantly higher because of associated benefits and the goal of being an employer of the department. I'd like to see that analysis.
Sure.
I don't know why that's only that close, number one. But then my second question is, as the chair pointed out, with perhaps a change in our VIP program on the horizon in the next number of years, is there some problem with institutionalizing employees as members of DEQ that at that point may make it more difficult to make adjustments if, in fact, we were to change that program and not need all those services as opposed to being contract services?
Mr. Chair, Senator Metzger, obviously there will be or would be some termination costs if we were to reduce the number of employees. I don't know what those would be. We could certainly try to provide some projection of that, but the cost of actually operating the program would be about the same as here.
I would be curious to see that analysis of those two personal pools of employees. Thank you, sir.
Well, I guess I've got my concern is that at the end of this budgetary session, we may have another set of increases that are negotiated beyond the control of the legislature. And if we make these employees permanent between now and the time that the sulfur sunsets and we could reevaluate the whole air quality question in Portland, we'll have two biennia and associated roll-up costs that would attach to these new positions. Could be looking at
fairly significant dollars. So unless we're, if we're at a break-even point now, roughly speaking, certainly in June by annual, we would not be, just judging on the inflationary brackets and the cost and benefits. And I'm wondering if it wouldn't be wise of us to maintain the contracted staff through the end of the period between now and the time the sulfur content regulations go into effect again. We can discuss that further. Let's move on.
Also reflecting our fourth budget strategy was to build, which was to build a conservative budget, our request contains no low priority. These are representative, this is just representative of activities that are in our base budget and in our packages. There are a number of priorities that aren't in our budget request at all. So when we make cuts in our budget, what it does is move that red line up, leaving more work unfunded. After three biennia of revenue shortfalls and our continuing efficiency efforts, we actually have some programs that would no longer be viable if further cuts were imposed, and there are others which would be on the edge. I know this is hard to read because the print is so small. It's just representative of activities. I'm pausing here because I can see people wanting to read this.
Question for Senator Morgan?
Can I do a follow-up on a request on Thursday that I did for an accounting on 319 funds? Do you have information for me on that one?
Mr. Chair, Representative Morgan, I have a letter here that has the projects from last fiscal year and then the projects that have been submitted to date. But I can
for the record.
I'm sorry, Mr. Chair. Mike Llewellyn, Division Administrator, Water Quality. Essentially, the 319 program is funded by EPA. They give the state about $1.6 million per year. That it's a non-point-four program. It's a competitive process where project applicants submit applications on an annual basis to DDQ, even rank the project compared to the EPA guidance of the year. Every year they come out with what they want these types of projects to go forward to, and then we provide those dollars in a grant to local governments, primarily soil water conservation districts. So I can give you the letter that has all the projects listed.
Actually, Representative King had his stand up, and then
you can go ahead first.
Representative King yields his time.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'll be very brief for the budget. On the not budgeted items, persistent PBTs, does that speak to my concerns about the PBT, in which my concern was that we went down a path where there wasn't enough research and knowledge about where it was going to and what it was going to cost. And my concern is that, I don't want to be misunderstood here, that those kind of issues, I certainly don't want to say that we shouldn't address them, but I guess I'm saying that we should thoroughly address them within the department prior to putting conditions on permits.
Mr. Chair, Representative Bessley, actually, PBT issue here probably does include, I think it does include the PBT, but a wide variety of other chemicals as well, and metals, some of which there is a great deal known about, like PCBs, for example, DDT, and so forth, which are have been studied, and there is quite a bit of information about PBT as well. The point here is that while we have some information about individual chemicals and metals. We do not have a consistent priority focus on dealing with these chemicals in the environment. They are treated often like anything else in a permit or a cleanup situation. What we're trying to do here over time is to give greater priority to these PDCs because they are the substances that seem to be doing most or much of the damage or a greater part of the damage in the environment. And that's what we need a greater focus on them. But I would say that in the case of PDPs, there is quite a bit of information available about the effect of tributyltins on organisms, and it was on that basis, on that scientific basis, that we addressed that in the permit condition.
Mr. Chair, just a quick follow-up. Does this mean that when you say not budgeted, is that you'll do work on those within your budget and it won't be specifically identified in the budget?
Mr. Chair, Representative Metzler, yes. There is ongoing work that addresses some aspects of these chemicals because they're obviously in the case of DDT, there is no permitted level for an industrial discharge, for example, because the substance has been illegal now for going on 30 years. But what we lack is a more comprehensive and focused program on dealing with PBCs as a group, and that's what is unbudgeted.
Thank you.
Mr.
King, do you have that question?
Under the non-budgeted standards for healthy streams and wetlands, I think that the Standing Committee were looking at a bill that defines high quality waters. So is this where you're charged, with doing that work? And one reason I ask that is that some call the committee that everything those standards that description has been around for 10 years and no one's defined it for 10 years, and now I'm looking at perhaps one reason why they're just not being defined is we're not funding the process to get to that point, and maybe bring up with you a little bit more.
Sure, Representative Kennedy. The bill that is being considered by the committee does have some resources attached to it, I believe, so that work that needs to be done, that we recognize ought to be done, that was not funded in the current biennium. There was a bill to do so last biennium as well that did not pass. And so this is just a recognition of that very work that is being considered being a priority that ought to be done that currently isn't funded.
Could you give some background on that? We can help you sometimes. Sure. Not well known, but.
Glad to be there.
Colin?
Okay. I wanted to spotlight what we call our restoration packages. In order to keep service at current levels, we're requesting to keep about 18 and a half existing FTE. Remember in the reductions we said that there were about 36 FTE that we subtracted, and these are the ones of those 36 that we're asking to keep. If we don't get revenue to cover these, we'll lose these staff. I'd like to just briefly walk through these. In the first package, to support our water quality work, we need to keep 5.25 FTE to permit industries to just discharge wastewater. Our proposal was to pay for these FTE by indexing fees to inflation and with some general fund. I might just mention that this program is very much on the edge. Here in Oregon, we write the same number of permits we're expected to with 56 staff as they do in Washington State with 133 staff.
And in January, there was a filing with EPA to withdraw delegation of this program. And so this is a critical restoration package for us. In package number 102, four FTEs are existing positions we need to keep in our on-site program. These are the workers who regulate the siting and construction of septic systems. We're trying to make this program self-supporting through user fees, and we're requesting a fee increase that would pay for these four positions. In package number 107, here we would restore 5.5 existing FTEs to implement new air standards and to reduce pollution from area and mobile sources. Because of the area-wide nature of these pollution sources as opposed to point source, we're proposing that we use general funds to pay for these positions. In package number 108, which is another air quality package, this would enable us to provide acceptable service levels to industries and other point sources that require air quality permits from us. And these positions would be funded by revenue from fee indexing. That's the House bill that I mentioned to you earlier that actually has no support. I think dead is the way most people are referring to it currently. The final restoration package, number 115, is in our underground storage tank program. This package prevents the elimination of two FTEs, and these folks would assure that all operating facilities meet the new EPA requirements and that all tanks that were not upgraded but that are still in place are properly decommissioned. These positions would be funded by a fee proposal that we have that extends the current tank fee of $60 instead of rolling it back to the $35 level, as was planned. Now, so remember that our...
Actually, I've got a question. Representative King, and then the same gentleman.
And you're referring to packages here. I assume we're going to get a little more detail later in the process. It'll help me if I know how to relate, how I can find information on the packages. I assume in this stack here there's something there, and I'm wondering if I can...
Mr. Chair, Representative King, would it be helpful if we prepared a little index with page numbers for you of each of our packages so that, or maybe even tab your budget binder?
Well, there.
Have those put into play?
Yeah, there, but they're not.
But with the package numbers?
I assume that, you know, we'd be able to find them through the table of contents, some, but it's...
Well, for instance, these air quality packages would be under the air quality tab, and there is a full description of the package there. However, it would help you to find them. We'd be happy to provide an index or get your binders tab. I'm seeing some nods, so we'll just go ahead and do that. Is there a particular one you'd like us to find the page number for right
well,
here?
Well, you just said air, and we were dealing with water. I don't want to stop your presentation, but I'd like more detail than just the number of a package, and I'm just wondering how best to go to find it in the material.
Okay.
Mr. Chair, I'd be glad to walk over and help get something at the moment so Helen can proceed, but I can show you. Basically, these binders, they have for each of the major divisions of the agency, there's a section in them that identifies some program priorities, and then following at the end of that section is a description of each of the program option packages with the budget details.
And
okay,
they're in your large binder. The detailed descriptions are in your large binder.
Right, that's what I'm wondering.
Mr. Chair, we said previously we had a new shortfall in the point source control program. Or any short
I'm going to find error in here.
Mr. Chair, Senator Tarnold, in the point first fulfilled program for water, is that the one that you're referring to?
Well, again, this has to do with municipality by assuming water.
Yeah, the fact is that we're experiencing some evidence shortfalls in both the water quality and air quality point source control programs, and in fact, we supplement those state supported programs with some general fund in this case.
And I don't want to take time, but it's not going to happen later. So if we look at package 101, are we going to have a discussion on package 101? Or is this just an overview and that's going to hold us in the
Mr. Chair, Representative Jensen, what we were planning for today was an overview so that you could get a glimpse of it and that we would have a very detailed discussion about Package 101 in your work session. We'd be happy to do it today if you're interested.
And Mr. Rocker just discussed with you about when we're going to be in our schedule for us.
Mr. Chair, on Thursday we have one bill relating to fees that's scheduled for a public hearing, Senate Bill 1109. And at that time, the department could provide additional information on their indexing series bill and other fee bills that are in the before the body.
Mr. Chair, we'll get into that issue. Where the money's coming from. Thank you.
We'll be prepared to do that. Mm-hmm. Okay, so our second budget strategy was to ask for more general fund and then to minimize our fee request. So we have the indexing bill, which isn't really going anywhere as far as we can tell. We have the on-site fee and the tank fee, and all of these are needed in order to keep these, or some other replacement funding, in order to keep the existing FTE.
I think it would be helpful to have the comparison of costs. For those, what is it, 95 employees that are currently contract employees and 75 that would be moved under that proposal, to create employee status, the costs and benefits compared to the cost of the contract, and extend that out over a couple at least by any year.
We can do some estimates on that for you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, be helpful.
And bring them to you.
Thank you.
In relationship to that particular topic, have we done some RFPs from, you know, from the contractors on that? Is there a possibility that we might be able to get more competitive from the private sector somewhere there?
Mr. Chair, Representative Jensen, during the last session, there was work, Representative Loken's committee, on just that. And some very preliminary work was done with some of the outside contractors. The question of what to bid out was never fully resolved. We didn't actually get a set of an RFP done, though quite a bit of work was done on it.
Have we gotten enough history now that we might be able to do that more effectively?
Mr. Chair, Representative Jensen, we can provide you, I think, initially with the analysis that we have done that we did for the last session and have updated more recently, and we'll add to that the information about the RFP process that was begun during the last session for you.
Mr. Chair, if I might. Representative Jensen, were you referring to an RFP for the contracted employees with the program being run within at DEQ, a competitive temporary agency bid?
Yes, I'm not okay. Response to it. I'm not familiar exactly with your whole process on this, but I'm just wondering at this point if the people get contracts are aware that we can do this in-house for the same dollars if we might not be able to talk to someone about better contracts. And I'm not questioning, you know, that I think those are merely answers that we need to have before we can decide what we want to do.
Mr. Chair, Representative Denson, I apologize. I misunderstood your question. There was an issue last session about contracting out the entire program.
Yes, sir.
But we did do some competitive bidding for the contract employees themselves.
Yes,
we did, and we can bring you that information.
You should be able to do that again.
Mr. Marston, if you could get the response to the committee administrator, I'm sure the other members would like to have the documentation for them.
Anything? I'm not going to go through these next five slides in detail unless you have specific questions, but I did want to include some information here for you on our packages. They give breakouts of the option packages by program. Since you'll be hearing about them in detail during the work session, that's why I hadn't planned to review them today. Now, one point that I want to make about this slide refers back to a point that Senator Tarnow made, and that's the starting point. We now have 739 FTE, authorization for 739 FTE, and that is not the starting point from which this slide begins. From the 739, we subtract the 36 FTE reduction and we come up with the 703 FTE, and that is the starting point from which this slide begins. So, Unless you have particular questions, and if you do, we'd be very happy to answer them. I'm going to skip over these next five until your work session, and then we'll go into quite some detail on each of these packages. Okay, hearing none, on page 9 of your handout, you should see something.
Question, Bob? No. I'm fine.
Never mind, Chelsea. Don't point your finger.
Yeah, you think with your hand.
Yeah.
Okay, you're taking it from Arnold down there. I mean, he's trying to say he thinks at all, but...
I've heard it.
I think the vice chair is really using his power here just to really get
me. I don't even think I'm the vice chair, but... please proceed, Chelsea.
Thank you, Mr. Vice Chair. Okay,
oh, gosh,
my
moment
is over.
That's just John Hall. I'll have to
review this, man. Little member abuse there.
It's just Jensen, you know?
Well, Mr. Chair, while you were in the hall, we covered five slides. We're now on page 9.
Maybe I have a real close down.
To just summarize where we are today, two of the strategies upon which we built our budget have not worked as well as we would have liked, and those are increasing general funds to balance our reliance on fees and indexing our fees to keep pace with inflation. And now that we know ever so clearly that new general fund is not available, the fact that we kept our promise to minimize fee increases creates budget problems for us today. Our indexing bill doesn't have support. It would have increased five fees, an average of 3.5%, and meanwhile we have drastically minimized other fee requests. The direction of ballot measure 6 is uncertain, at least for now. And the Willamette River and the Lower Columbia National Estuary Program packages in our budget rely on this funding source. So as we see it, our budget has significant vulnerabilities as we go into your work session. Probably sounds familiar to some of you. Here's a summary of the vulnerabilities that we can see. Starting at the top, the indexing bill having no support creates a hole of about $750,000. We have about $1.6 million of new general fund requests in our package, and I guess I'd characterize that as iffy because of the shortage of general funds. We're not sure of the spending direction of ballot measure 66, so that's an area of vulnerability probably. And of course, we are preparing general fund cut options of 4% to our base budget to give to you.
Question for Senator Trump.
Is there a safe assumption that measure 66 funding will help with the Willamette River package on page 7? I think it's about a $1.25 million package.
Senator Tarno, that whole amount is ballot measure 66 funded. That's correct. Now, the estimated unfunded payroll increases here, the $3.9 million, this is the only line on this chart that is not accounted for in our budget. And the reason for that is that this is an unknown, and we cannot put things that aren't real or known in our budget request. This is our estimate of the pay increases that would come out of the current bargaining sessions now going on at the central table. This estimate, of course, is very soft. It's based on on the low end of the range that that we would think is under discussion, and we're assuming with this a least cost phased implementation. But as I say, these negotiations are underway. They have not been completed, and so this $3.9 million figure is very soft.
That's true. Rick Van Nesterwick.
Haven't we addressed that partially with the bill we passed through full ways and means a week or two ago? And wouldn't the remainder of that be dealt with through the emergency board? So what, I guess my question is, why are we talking about it in two different places?
Mr. Chair, Representative, what the emergency board did was, what the Ways and Means did last week was take care of a portion of the general fund increases that may be a result of negotiated salary increases. However, this is referring to other and federal funds, which are not dealt with in that bill. When there are negotiated salary increases in other funds to off-state employees, those employees that are paid primarily out of other funds, you have to get the revenue somewhere else, and the Ways and Means cannot provide the revenue without some kind of a fee adjustment or other mechanism like that.
Thank you.
I guess the other issue is, or it's the same issue, is that the prerogatives of the executive branch can't be ignored or presumed or limited by the legislative branch. So in the same way we ended up with the unfunded payroll increases in this biennium, we could see that again.
How do I identify the ballot measure 66 packages?
Ms. Marsh.
Mr. Chair, ballot measure 66 packages that I think were referred to in an earlier slide are number one, for the Willamette River acceleration of the CMBL development.
I'm not able to see them in the notebook because latest budget that you see.
Mr. Chair, Representative King, if you look on page 7 in your the smaller handout under the water quality packages slide, the two that are identified as Willamette River, which has an other fund cost of $1.25 million.
You say page 7 on that.
The page 7 on the slide handout part is provided to the
airport.
I don't think you can say that that's
listed as other funds in that package. It's the Willamette Rivers package that has a cost of $1.25 million in other funds. And the one three down from that, Lower Columbia NEP of $700,000, other funds, those are the two that are measure 66.
You're just supposed to know that.
And Mr. Chair, if I may, Representative King, on page 250 of your large budget book. There's the Willamette package. That's the $1.25 million of Measure 66 funds. And then on page 275, is the Lower Columbia National Estuary Program package. You're welcome.
So it's within the packages themselves. These are earmarked as a particular program source funds.
So we're doing several things to respond to the situation. First of all, we're keeping in touch with stakeholders and seafarers. We've had two discussions with industry groups so far, exploring some possible solutions. We're developing 4% general fund cut options that you've requested, and we're describing the impact of those cuts. The other day, someone said to me, this is an unusual solution to a budget hole problem that you're developing cut options, but the fact is that we have to look at all of our options. So we're doing that. And we will continue to work on this problem between now and the work session. And we will look forward to going through our budget and packages in more detail at that time.
Guy, I don't think that's an unusual solution at all. When you hit the wall on funding and your fee increases, and the feedback from the market is that they're not anxious, willing, and able. And you've run to the wall on general funds. And the Measure 66 monies have been spent 3, 4, and 6 times by different agencies of the state. The other options to cut programs. I don't think it's unusual. I think it's predictable. Any further questions or any other questions?
I'm just wondering how we define things as cuts when we go from 739
FTE to 77. Flattened increase curve. And I understand your parlance is one that defies logic at some point. The other issue, and I don't mean to be partisan about this, but it really isn't partisan. The idea that when you've got uncontrolled increases in personnel costs, That rolls a budget hole forward that has to be dealt with in some other way. And that was all the state government. I don't know what the size of that increase in real terms and dollars was. It was a bunch. And every agency has had to deal with it in different ways. You can't always just go to the well and get more money. Yes.
Mr. Chair, if I may.
Please.
Representative King. I understand your observation. There are just two points that I would like to ask you to consider. One is that 75 of those FTE we really already have in the form of contract employees. And then the other thing is that it's really going to be 869 instead of 877 after our technical adjustments are made. The Willamette package shows more FTE than it ought to, and so we're going to be reducing about 8 FTE from that one. So those are just two things that I would ask you to consider in our field.
Question, Senator George.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. if in fact we had, it sounds like you are now focusing more on the Willamette, particularly the testing. The issue of the water quality at for Tiger in Wilsonville is all of a sudden taken on a brand new life.
If you did, because we have a water lab, correct, within DEQ, or a laboratory, a lab. If we do more testing, because that seems to be a real weakness, are you building that into this current budget? Is that the idea that we're going to be doing more testing?
Mr. Chair, Senator George, yes, actually in the Willamette River request, that package that we've been discussing, there are several, in fact, a significant number of monitoring positions, both through some of the steelhead monitoring, the continuation of that as the Oregon plan moves from the coast into the steelhead areas, and also to do some of the direct water quality monitoring on the Willamette as a whole. So, yes, there is a significant component of monitoring in that package.
I talked recently to some of the watershed commissions, soil conservation, and these folks said, we're ready to go out there and do these things too. And I think we can, you know, if we able to trust them to pull appropriate samples, training for the water temperatures below and above, you know, at the point and above I'm going to try this one more time. Let's be money. At the point source and also above it, measuring temperature and stuff like that, I think they're perfectly capable. And they seem to me like they're willing to volunteer. Are we looking at that, or if these numbers fall short? In other words, we don't want to have a program collapse because we couldn't hire someone if, in fact, we get volunteers.
Mr. Chair, Senator George, actually the entire Oregon plan is premised on maximum use of volunteer posts. And the people that were, if we were to ask for the monitoring positions to actually go out and do the sampling, say, for temperature, it would be a much, much larger
package.
So these are the folks who will work, some of them will be working with the watershed councils and others to do exactly what you said, and the GWEB money has been available and presumably will continue to be available to watershed councils to get the equipment. Many of them got that this biennium. And also to do some of the sampling.
One follow-up, one additional follow-up. The Department of Ag also has a laboratory, so we have two. And I'm going to try to get to see these this week if we can. Are we coordinating with Department of Ag to make sure that we maximize these facilities to accomplish this testing?
Mr. Chair, Senator George, I'm not aware that the Ag Lab does any water quality testing or analysis. I'm going to turn now and see if Rick Gates will affirm that with a shake of his head. Their sampling and testing has mainly been in things like chemicals in food and things like that.
Mr. Chair, my name is Rick Gates. I'm the laboratory administrator for DBQ. Senator George, well, there are three main labs in the state. One's a division lab, the other's a DEQ lab, and the third is the Department of Ag lab. And I don't want to mention the Oregon OSHA lab because we're not involved in environmental testing. But between those three labs, we work extensively together to not duplicate each other's services. The Department of Ag Lab does primarily pesticide analyses. The only slight duplication is on things like DDT, where some of the methods that we're using are similar with theirs. But when you talk about Glufion, Roundup, or any of the newer pesticides, we defer all that work to the Department of Ag when they come through our facility.
But they are testing water in order to establish those.
They will do testing water. They contract with the Department of Forestry for certain types of testing. They also do follow-up on pesticide spill and complaint investigations in which they will do that testing. And
the Forestry has a lab also?
No, they do not.
Oh.
That I'm aware of, the Department of Forestry will select samples for projects that they are doing and submit them to the Department of Agriculture.
I think the Forestry does have a lab, but it's for silviculture and not water testing.
Thank you. Very helpful.
Colleagues, we have session at 10 this morning for the Senate. So we will be concluding at this time. And then when we reconvene, it will be to hear
any wrap-up that Helen has to offer, and then we'll go to Linda Gilbert's presentation for budget management from the Department of Administrative Services.
Mr. Chair, thanks. Actually, we're done with this budget overview, and what we expect to do from now on is to continue working with the stakeholders and laying out some more options for you between now and the work session on the budget set scenarios and so forth, so that we can come forward with some good ideas when we convene.
With that, we'll go ahead and conclude today's session. We'll go into our schedule. We'll bring it back tomorrow at 8:30 to continue with Linda Gilbert's presentation. Okay. Move a work session. Bring your phone.